Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's January 14th, 2014. We've got the Happy Hour guys. We got Ben Keen with his new book, Bitters and Esters, Kelly from Kelso, and Weilbacher. It's a great show tonight. Thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. We're looking forward to our year 2014, and we're here in the studio at Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's in Bushwick. And go ahead. It's a good time. If you want to be a member, join HeritageRadioNetwork.org. There's different levels. There's student levels. You get invited to a lot of special parties, and we're really looking forward to having a great year here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. All right. Jimmy Ludwig, back in the house.
Back in the house with the Happy Hour guys. I have all three, and direct from Broadway today, we have Mark Aldrich, the other Happy Hour guys.
The thing about the Happy Hour guys is like, this is a beer show, but we've got like Broadway celebrities. I mean, Mark, what show are you in?
I am currently in Disney's Newsies on Broadway. And I will probably have to steal away pretty quickly, unfortunately, to make my curtain time tonight.
It's hard having a working gig as an actor, right?
It's tough, but you know, the call of the beer was too strong to resist today.
And then Justin Squiggs, our good buddy, who's we went from being an actor to being a Broadway sketch artist.
Oh, well, I do a little bit of everything, so...
But you're awesome, and you've also done a couple labels for Barrier Brewing, right?
Yeah, I've done a bit of beer art here and there.
Yeah, it looks kind of sketchy.
I'm very sketchy. Just look out, Kelly. Look out, Kelly.
Well, hey, we're trying to get, and we got Yixie, who's a rep from Union Beer here tonight with a Weilbacher.
Yeah.
How are you, Yixie?
Hey, how are you?
And Kelly Taylor, how are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well. We got some beers. We're ready to roll.
All right. And one of our favorite homebrewing school beer teachers, everything, John.
Hi, Jimmy. Thanks for having me today.
John Lapolo from Bitter and Esters, a great place in Brooklyn to learn to make beer. And you've made some cool beers, too, right? You made a beer with Dick Cantwell from Elysian.
Yeah, I brought some today with an experimental hop, which is awesome. I made a beer with Weilbacher. Actually, Weilbacher came in and made beer. That's what we're drinking right now, a little bit of Weilbacher.
Experimental hop. Does that mean like some kind of crazy like government-engineered fun?
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah. You grow wings after you drink it. It's pretty cool.
I'm down with that.
Area 52.
It is. It's much more fun than Area 51.
We're leading up to the main event. We got Bob. It's how do you say your last name?
Fotu.
Fotu.
Very easy. Easy to pronounce.
Fotu.
And today I brought three of our big bottle series, Merry Monks, our Belgian triple.
That is a big bottle.
That is. Thank you. And Double Simcoe, which is our double IPA. And again, big bottle, big beer, great hop taste, and tiny. Which is our Belgian, I'm holding it up like anybody can see it. It's tiny, our Belgian-inspired stout, only 11.8%, but I'm telling you, it's got great taste. All three of these beers. But
Bob, are you going to be pouring us beers tonight?
I am, and we're starting off with Merry Monks, which, for a craft brewery, it's very unusual. It's our best-selling beer, and if I tell people that, they don't believe us. But very counter everything else going on, because usually... In the craft industry, IPAs are the leading brand of every brewery. So we're different. We're different in the way we make beer. And you should get some great taste on all the guys sitting in the room here with this. It's a nice...
It's nice. It's like almost a fruit finish.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of people think they pick up banana in this beer.
Yeah.
But I don't try and tell them that ahead of time. For me, I call this the training beer for people that say they don't like beer. Because it brings many people into the category, and I never tell them that it's a 9.3% beer.
We like to call that a gateway beer, Bob.
It is a gateway into many
beer.
Things.
Yeah. I love being on the show. You should see all the beers that are out here. It's amazing.
Yeah, who else brought beers? You brought some good
Kelly beer. Brought beer, right?
Yeah, I brought a couple different things. I brought our original beer, a nut brown lager, in the can, canned here in Brooklyn. I figured it would be a nice...
I'm not touching that line.
I thought it'd be a nice palate cleanser, kind of in the middle of a bunch of barrel-aged stuff. We brought the Fuku, Jimmy, which I know you really enjoy, which is a beer we designed with the Mama Fuku group.
It's that's a really fun beer.
What is the Fuku?
It's basically a smoked Kolsch wit goose.
Excuse me?
You can't do that.
Gesundheit.
I got to think of a better way
to
say that.
Do you brew with any...
Do you put any... It's a wit beer with smoked malt and
animal
sea
parts
salt
in there, Kelly?
No, it's actually vegan.
There's no animal parts.
No, we let Mama Fuku come up with all the animal parts, and then we serve the beer.
Not touching that one either. Nope.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Don't touch the parts.
And then we brought a barrel-aged oatmeal stout. It was aged in imperial oatmeal stout aged in maple liquor barrels from Vermont.
Mm. What?
You know, talking about your beers, Kelly, you know, you're really a small brewery.
Yeah.
And you're
incredibly
tiny.
So, crafty.
What are some places, like, you got the cans out now that are pretty interesting, because before craft you were cans all draft,
yeah.
What are some places we can get the cans?
Well, Whole Foods has been very eager to pick up the cans here in the city. They're up and down Fulton Street, where the brewery is over in Clinton Hill in Brooklyn. The Met Foods, the corner...
Somebody just tried to sell me one on the subway.
yeah,
for real. You know, like, he was like, "Hey, come here between cars. I got something for you." Yeah, he was like, you know, it's Kelso Nut Brown Lager.
This isn't your mother's Brooklyn.
Happy hour, guys. Do you guys drink beer behind the stage when you're on?
Absolutely not.
Plays and working.
Never, no, ever, ever.
You've been to our brewery before.
Yes, we have.
Oh,
before,
yeah, right. You didn't drink anything,
but that was our day off.
Wait,
that was our day off.
No, yeah, that's right.
That was our day off.
Day off. There was no whiskey there either.
On the inking drink.
No, yeah, nope, absolutely was not allowed.
I tell you again, this is an awesome crowd, and we're building up. First, John LaPola, you know, you're an expert. You teach people how to make beer. You definitely show people how to clean. I was lucky to take your Bitter Nesters Beer 101, the beer making course, and I really think that. Happy hour, guys. You guys should sit in on the class.
Because you absolutely should.
About a year ago, I thought let's put in a little, you know, brew pub system in the back of my restaurant, Jimmy's Number 43. And my good friend Chris Kuzme from Ferment About It said, "Why don't you better take the class of bitternesses first." And I took it. And then basically I saw John spending the whole time talking about cleaning solutions and cleaning. I said, you know what?
I completely talked him out of it.
Yeah. I don't do that stuff because... But what do you think of the Merry Monks? Because I want you to break it
delicious
down.
It's delicious. You know, I used to... work in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So I remember when Weyerbacher opened, and we were thrilled to have a craft brewery. It was amazing because all you had was Yingling, which is fine. But I've always loved your brewery. And you guys came and you brewed a beer with us. You actually gave us a barrel. You gave us a Dad's Hat whiskey barrel. And we made your barrel-aged Imperial Stout.
You remember that, Bob?
You know what? Actually, I was not there, but Chris Riley, one of our brewers, was there. And
it came out amazing.
Yeah, we do. Actually, coming out now, this part of the year, is our Insanity and Heresy, which are our barrel-aged beers that we do.
It was Heresy.
Yep.
It was the
Heresy, which is Heresy. The base beer for that is Old Heathen. And if you haven't tried Old Heathen, it's
stop
a
calling
lot
us that.
And also, we're just right up the street from Kelso, so we know everybody who works at Kelso. And I got to say, I absolutely love the beers coming out of Kelso. Thank I just want to let you know. They're so good. And I just wish there was more of it. More beer. More beer.
Let's keep the show rolling. I want to first bring in also, this is Ben Keen. It's one of the reasons we have the show tonight. He wrote a really great book, and I was lucky that it came in the mail today, and I picked it up at my mailbox on the way over, but it's... what's the name of your book, man?
It's called The Great Northeast Brewery Tour, because, you know, any good beer deserves a little hyperbole, right? So,
well, I will say we're going to try to weave together, you know, everyone in the room and the book, you know, and talk about that today. But one thing, when I was most impressed, you know, there's a lot of beer books out now, and sometimes they're exhaustive. You know, I saw one that was like 1,000 beers or something. So I thought, okay, Northeast Brewery, how many breweries are there? There's a lot, right?
Well, yeah, in the Northeast, I would guess that there are probably 400 or more.
Wait, didn't
currently
you write a book?
Yeah, I know.
Don't guess.
I wrote a book. I didn't.
Wait, high five on the air. That's a good one. But what I'm trying to say is, but it's not an exhaustive book. It's curated, and it's actually, so you've outlined like little profile. Profiles of some breweries and places to stay. So I want to. So Jimmy, what do you think? Look at that book. There's nice photos. This is one of the best books I've seen of the year.
Jimmy, it's a beautiful book, and I'd like to do a dramatic reading, if I may, from the Weyerbacher page. And I'm just going to give you the first sentence, and this will give you an idea of what the text is like, and how badly you all need to buy this book, own it, and read it. So here we go.
Okay, what's the character? Are you doing Scottish?
We're going to England here.
Pennsylvania.
No, sorry.
Pennsylvania Dutch.
He's doing Pennsylvania Quaker.
I can't do Pennsylvania Dutch, sorry. Whether or not it qualifies as a religious experience, the fact still remains Weyerbacher was born in a stable. I mean, come on.
Wow. Is that true?
Religious experience, born in a stable.
It is a true fact. I did not make that up. Other parts of the book, maybe.
Tell us the story of what. So Weyerbacher is originally, it started what? You were making ales, but you made big beers.
Everything we do are ales, and we started in a little stable in Easton. And probably 7 years ago, we moved into a new facility. Because
Easton isn't where they make Crayola crayons.
It absolutely is. Easton's known for three things.
I've been there.
Weyerbacher beer,
Renaissance,
Crayola crayons, Martin guitars. Oh, and I forgot Larry Holmes when boxing was boxing.
Oh yeah.
And then as we grew, we moved in, and I would welcome anybody to come and see the brewery because now we actually look like we belong. It's a nice brewery. We put an addition on last year.
Bob, can we come out and shoot sometime soon?
Absolutely. Love to have you.
All right, so look for a Happy Hour Guys episode featuring Weyerbacher real soon. Cool.
It's a great thing. There's so many really good breweries in the Northeast, and I'm really glad you wrote this book because I'm going to use it as a roadmap.
Well, I think you
figure
already
out my summer.
I think you already did, Jimmy. If you remember last summer, you were down in Cape May, New Jersey. And we traded emails about the Cape May Brewing Company. You were down there with some friends, and you were in need of beer, and it sounded like an emergency. And so I said, hey, you know what? I've actually been to the Cape May Brewing Company. You should check those guys out. And they're in the book.
Did I write something on the cover of your book?
You wrote something on the back. Someone could dramatically read that, too.
The back cover.
Oh, there it is. Yes.
Mark Aldrich from Newsies.
Professional. It's a professional job.
There we go. I'm not going to do it British, though. So it doesn't make sense. Jimmy's not British. Ready to travel the beer route from D.C. to Maine? Every town seems to have a new local brewery, and Keene leads the way with his fun book. Buy a copy, fill up your gas tank, and hit the road. I plan to.
I think that's one of those quotes where I talked to Ben on the phone, and then he wrote it, but he's awesome. That's what I'm saying. It's like Weyerbacher. It's like we don't know a lot about Weyerbacher. I don't know a lot about Cape May Brewing. Some of the other breweries, you really did a great job of curating, you know, your choices. Like Element in Western Mass, like I've had a couple bottles. I love it. So, what was your process? Were there just places that you loved, or how did you do this?
Probably the biggest challenge was narrowing down the number of breweries to a manageable count that my publisher would let me write about. And I really tried to feature places that did great beers, were super creative, and had every place in the book is open to visitors and has some kind of tasting room, a bar. There's some brew pubs in there, and are really kind of inviting and welcoming places to kind of spend the day. Like you said, it's really meant to be a travel guide with sort of beer leading the way. I tried to pick places all throughout the region, not just kind of in the big cities. So you'll find stuff in Western Mass, Western New York, Western PA, way up in Maine. Yeah, and hopefully it'll get people off the beaten track and, you know, stuck or snowbound or whatever brewery.
Kelly, have you been to any of those breweries?
Besides
Brooklyn Brewery.
Yeah.
In there.
Yeah, I've been to
And Garrett Oliver wrote a really awesome
Flying Dog.
Jimmy, you guys should read part of Garrett Oliver's introduction to the book because it's pretty brilliant. Yeah. It talks about Boston.
Omegang, obviously.
Another great brewery.
High Point.
Yeah. You've been to High Point?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny things. High Point is, the label as Ramstein, if anyone ever had it. Yeah. And they specialize in German-style wheat beers. I love their beers.
Awesome. Right. Yeah.
There's some great hiking at High Point State Park out there. So you go out to the state park, you can camp, you can go hiking, bang down, see the brewery.
Well, on East 7th Street in the East Village, the original landlord, who Jerry Kuze, he opened Burp Castle and what was called Brewskis. He was really good friends with High Point. And You know, so we used to get a bunch of Ramstein. They had a platinum wheat that was really good. Have you been out there, Jamie?
I just wanted to say one thing about the book itself, and that is, you know, we talk about this on our show all the time, Bev touring. You know, we talk about getting, you know, put some gas in the tank and go and have a drink somewhere. But also, that's not just have a drink in the place. Experience the local area, you know. Go out to the state park, totally. Take a hike, see what the history of the town is. You know, learn a place, learn the people. Because for us, when we shoot shows, we found out a long time ago that the sort of process of making beer isn't very good TV, but the people and the places, that's what it's all about, and that's what we try to show in our program. And it's like, what's the flavor? What's the flavor of the beer, and also what's the flavor of the place around it? So awesome. We'd recommend that with this book, for sure.
Let's keep passing the book around. Everybody say... Well, at least mention a brewery that they've been to.
I was just looking for a brewery that I did a clone for today. I brewed a beer, a Vienna Lager, from I was trying to clone Devil's Backbone. You know Devil's Backbone in Virginia?
Yeah.
It's my girlfriend Carla's favorite beer. And so for my girlfriend, I brewed this beer today. And it's for a lagering thing that Josh Bernstein's doing. Mm-hmm. He's doing this thing in a lager cave that they found in Brooklyn, and he invited us to pour a beer. And so I said, "Oh yeah, definitely." So I worked all day.
March 1st during New York City Beer.
Yeah, March 1st,
we'll be
which
there
is
right next to you.
You will, yeah. That's my girlfriend's birthday too. Yeah. That's why
so
I had to make
Kelly,
her a beer.
Kelly, you know about the event with Josh?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, we're going to be there.
I can't wait.
You're lagering beer in the cellar too?
No, we actually have a lager tank at the store. So we made a Vienna lager today. A single decoction took forever. But
they
yeah,
tend to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going over there next week, and we're going to be taking some lager over there and storing it in the cellar.
Oh, that's so cool.
Until the event.
Oh, I want to do that too.
Yeah, so I'll keep you in the loop on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, all right. That might be totally cool.
So we're
going to
actually lager beer in these 100-year-old caves in, where is that, Prospect Heights?
It's in Crown Heights. I think it's on Dean Street. Yeah, yeah. I've only seen pictures, but it looks super cool.
Who knew? Did they discover these?
People
just knew about them forever? I mean,
which people
who
knew?
Oh, there's so many breweries in Brooklyn.
I didn't know. Where's the sign that says Lager Caves this way?
Everybody knew but you. I'm sorry.
Nobody tells me anything.
Jimmy, it was the ancient people of Brooklyn.
Yes.
All right, someone else take the book. I know we're coming up on our short break, but someone else grab the book. Mark Alders, come on, grab the book.
I'm just
going
to say something about the book. When I saw it today for the first time, I said, you know what? We need to get this guy to our brewery, but somebody at our brewery was way ahead of me, and he's already scheduled. So, awesome job.
Let's let Ben, instead of all the actors. Ben, yes. Why don't you just read off some of the tours? You've got a bunch of tour dates coming up
where
you can meet Ben, and he'll sign the book and all that.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to be driving all around all over again. And in addition to Weyerbacher, I'm going to Twin Lakes in Delaware. I'm going to a bunch of bookstores. I'm going to be doing an awesome dinner at Jimmy's Number 43. I'm going to Roy Pitts in Pennsylvania. I'm going to Flying Fish in New Jersey and back to Cape May. Love those guys. Up to Two Roads in Connecticut too on Super Bowl Sunday. So if you go fill up a growler, you can hang out with me before the game.
Go Seahawks.
Awesome. Hey, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back and talk a lot more with all these guys on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Cheers, guys. All right.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products.
With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. What's this? Heritage Radio Network with Jimmy Carbonian.
Jimmy Ludwig from the Happy
Jimmy
Hour
Show.
Guys.
All right.
Hey, it's the Jimmy Show. Hey, I want to read a little bit from the foreword of this incredible book, which was written by Garrett Oliver, not the book, but the foreword. I just want to read the last couple of lines, which are terrific, and then we'll go back to our friend, Mr. Keene. There are people out there who are waiting to brew a pint for you and to have a pint with you. Go live a little. No, actually, live a lot. That, to me, is craft beer in a nutshell, man.
So one thing, we're here with Ben Keene, the author of The Great Northeast Brewery Tour. And we've been talking. We've got Bob from Weyerbacher. We've got Kelly Taylor, John LaPola from Bitter Nestors, Justin Squiggs, everybody. We've got a great turnout. But how did you get into this, man? I mean, you're quite an accomplished writer. I mean, you wrote for the Oxford Encyclopedia of Beer. You've written for – and you know, you're a really good writer, man.
Well, thanks for the flattery.
Can't believe you're on our show. Yeah. Come on.
I'll give you my number later. Yeah, I actually I used to work at Oxford University Press, and I edited all kinds of books about food and food history. And Oxford has this giant, awesome book called The Companion to Wine, written by Jancis Robinson. And I thought this was about, I don't know, 2006, 2007. Hey, how come Oxford, England, doesn't have a book about beer? And so I petitioned my boss over and over and over for many, many months, who wasn't a beer drinker, and
Was his name Andy Smith?
No.
No. But you know Andy Smith, right?
I do know Andy Smith,
he works
yeah.
there, too. Yeah, he's cool.
But yeah, I basically wore people down until they thought, all right, maybe a beer book would be a good idea.
Ben, I got a question for you. Sorry to interrupt. We know a lot of people out there who know something about beer.
Sure.
A little knowledge being a dangerous thing. Who say, I should write a book. I'm going to write a book. How long? What was the process like? I mean, how long did this take? And what was the researching process like? I mean, that's a lot, right?
Well, yeah. It took from the time that I kind of had the idea and started working about 2 years.
2 years.
So it was slow. I mean, part of it is searching for a publisher and convincing someone to give you a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of money to write a book. I spent probably 8 months or so visiting breweries, interviewing brewers.
Yep.
You know, important tasting beer.
How many times
did you drink a lot?
How many times on your trip, when you explained to people what you were doing, did they say, "Can I have your job?"
Every time, all the time.
Nice, nice.
We all get that.
I get that all the time. I do.
Don't you love that about the craft beer industry, Jimmy? Do people say that to you all the time? Do they really?
No.
I don't want his job. I want to be him.
Oh yeah,
that's right. That's we all just want to be Jimmy Carbone, pretty much. I mean, you know, that's what I've heard.
Jimmy, you're on the show because you're supposed to talk for me. So come on.
Yeah,
I'm
keeping the show going. Jimmy's over there drinking.
Yeah. I'd rather ask Kelly Taylor. You know. I mean, you started off in the Pacific Northwest, and it's kind of like an ongoing interview because every time you really make...
Yeah, I make a lot of stuff up as I go along.
Yeah. So, let me ask you this. If somebody starts a new brewery, let's say they had a small brewery and they have to move, hypothetically.
Okay.
Like...
That's different than starting a new brewery.
We're getting
deep
now. We talked a little about books, but we're going to talk about deepness.
So, which one are we talking? Starting a new brewery? Or?
Say you already have a small brewery and you've started off. But you're suddenly going to expand. And we see a lot of guys going through that now. It's like a lot of small craft breweries. And John knows, too. It's like, you know, suddenly they're going to expand. When you're going to expand, you know, would you have to rebuild an entire brewery? You know, because you've done this. You've opened some breweries.
I've opened a number of breweries around the country. And really, you just have to kind of decide what it is you're trying to do. And typically, if you've got production already, and you're expanding, you have to open a separate brewery. You can't just shut down one.
Because I remember when Scott Vicar at Captain Lawrence, He had his first brewery, and then when he went, he had his new brewery. He bought everything new. And our buddy out in the Bay Area at Faction Brewing.
That's right.
Bought his old equipment and drove across country. So there's like this. I'm trying to like get deep to this, you know, undercurrent of
right. Yeah,
and buddies.
I remember that guy too. If you've got an existing production, you can't cut that. You can't worry about losing that production. And there's so many things that happen when you're building a brewery that are unforeseen. You can plan to the very last dot and on the I's and cross all the T's, but you're still going to have problems and your production is going to be pushed back. Yeah. So you need to have two different things operating at the same time when you're moving a brewery. That's
I would second that because we lost about 3 weeks. That great bottling line that ran so well over here, you move it 10 feet onto the other side, and all of a sudden, doesn't work as well.
So that's what I'm trying to get.
But you can move some stuff. Bottling lines, canning lines, filters, things like that. You can very easily move from one to another. But when you're talking about tanks and brew systems, brew house, kettles, mash tons, you know, the infrastructure, boilers, things like that. You know, you need to buy a new infrastructure.
Let's go, going back to Ben's book. So you guys started in a stable.
Yes. Pretty much.
Give us like the evolution of a brewery from when you guys started to where you are now. In terms of,
I haven't been there that long.
But
we just finished our 18th year.
Wow.
And the equipment that you start out, especially most craft brewers, in my opinion, are underfunded when they start. So they're all using used equipment. And as you start to grow, you get a little bit more money. You're able to buy. Well, the only way you can buy today is new equipment because there's so many guys opening up a brewery and all the used equipment is pretty much hard to find.
The market for used equipment, it must be just unbelievable.
It's really quite ridiculous.
So when we moved into the other side, we had to 6 or 7 months, even 8 months ahead, order new fermenters because if you didn't, you wouldn't have them in time.
Wow.
So an interesting point to that, too, is now there used to be 3 or 4 equipment manufacturers that you're going to order from. Now there's like a dozen, you know, from the United States and China and Europe.
You know, it's funny. I get emails all the time from Chinese brewing manufacturers.
They're very diligent. Yeah.
I get emails all the time from this Nigerian prince. He's got money.
Are you in love with him
yet? You too.
He's got a lot. I need to get back to that guy.
He's really into beer also.
Yeah. And your wallet.
Yeah.
But, you know, growing is really not as simple as some people think. And there's always trials and tribulations. That great machine that ran so well for so many years, now that you're making it work twice as hard because you have that growth, it's going to break more often.
But are you at Weyerbacher, are you in the same physical location when you started?
No, we have been in this location for the last 7 years. And the landlord just added on, I forget how many, it was 7,500 square feet, and we've already filled that up. Mm. You know, you think you have a lot of room, but with the way the brewery has grown and people finding out who we are, and it's just wonderful.
Tell us about your job, because you're like the national sales director, right? Yeah.
I am the national sales
manager. How do you spell your last name?
Exactly.
It's hard to pronounce.
F-A-U-T-E-U-X. Fautu. Very easy.
And what's your phone number?
No, I'm kidding.
999-9999.
Exactly. Free beer. No.
National sales director. Does that mean that Weyerbacher's in every state?
No. We are, I mean, it's a title, really. Titles don't mean anything to me. What really means a lot to me is being able to expose people to our beer, because I think the beer is fantastic. There's so many great craft beers out there today. I'm sure everybody in this room would agree with me. So we're in 17 states, and we are not looking to go anywhere else right now. We want to make sure that we grow and satisfy the people within the markets we're in. Because I think the mistake most breweries make is they go everywhere.
Overreaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they can't supply. And for that reason, we stick in our model and grow from within, grow from the brewery out.
And keep the quality up. That's great. Ben, I got a question for you. I'm looking at some of your stuff here, and I'm noticing that the company that is publishing your book is in Minneapolis, right? It's up in Minnesota.
True.
You're from Cambridge, right? It says here Cambridge.
I lived in Brooklyn for 11 years.
You did.
I've only recently relocated
to
Cambridge.
Here's my question, though. You've just gone to all these great places. You've been all up and down the Northeast and learned so much about all these places. What's your local? when you are, quote unquote, home,
yeah,
where do you go for your local?
Brewery wise or bar wise?
It's an open question.
Oh, okay. The closest place to my apartment with great beer is called Five Horses Tavern.
Mm. Is that in Cambridge?
I've been there.
It's in Davis Square. They often have Weyerbacher. Yeah.
They have great food.
And they have great food.
Absolutely.
So that's walking distance, stumbling distance if you've had too many.
Very nice.
And brewery-wise, Boston has blown up in the last couple of years. One of the newest places that's in my book that I love is called Mystic.
Mystic.
Mystic Brewing.
Chelsea, Massachusetts, right? Yeah, we met them last year at the Craft Brewers Conference in D.C.
They won a gold medal this year at GABF. And they do fantastic saisons. The owner and founder is a fermentation scientist. So if there's ever somebody who is meant to open a brewery,
absolutely.
It's probably Brian.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You're three beers behind, Jimmy.
Oh.
I know. There's some smoky stuff.
I'm keeping track over here, and we had some Fuku already. We had a little bit of Nut Brown Lager, and you just poured. What did happen here?
The Dick Cantwell beer. It's the experimental hop beer. When Dick Cantwell came from Elysian.
So is this a numbered hop from one of the hop
farms? It's HBC 562, I think.
From Hop Union, probably?
Hop Union, yeah.
All right, guys, I'm going to do something right now. I've got the book in front of me, and I'm going to spin the pages, and I'm just going to, you guys say stop, and I'll drop my finger, and we'll see what we land on. Ready? Here we go. One, two, three.
Stop.
Flying Dog Brewery.
All right.
Awesome.
All right. Flying Sweet. Dog Brewery in Maryland. This is amazing. East Coast is just chock full of amazing beer, and we got wonderful. We have examples of that right here in this room with us. That's amazing. Love that. Love this book.
You pick another one.
All right, ready?
That was fun.
Squiggs is going to pick this one.
Talk about Maine.
Oh yeah, well let's talk about Maine. Mark wanted to talk about this before he left. He had to take off, get back to Broadway, but he used to go to Maine all the time, and he hasn't been up there in a couple of years. And the Maine listings that you have in there, most of them didn't even exist.
Yeah.
The last time he was up there 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So you talk about a scene that is just blowing. He said to me tonight when we grabbed the book, he was like, "Look in the Maine section." I looked at it. I was like, I don't recognize any of these names. Yeah. He's like, "I know. They're just, you know, this, you turn over a rock in a lot of these communities, and a craft beer, you know, a craft brewery pops up."
I guarantee you they were all home brewers to start with. Sorry. Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right.
I want to chime in on that because Dan Weyerbach was a home brewer.
Yeah.
It's a passion that's inside of you that makes you want to make no money for many years.
Right? You hear that, guys?
Yeah, is that true?
It's kind of like writing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
but the end result is
thank you.
You're doing a job, or it's not even a job when it's something you enjoy doing.
So many home brewers want to open breweries, and they say to me, "How do I open a brewery?" And I say, "Well, first get Dick Cantwell's book and read it. Can I do something else? Get $1 million and someone who knows how to brew beer. That's what you should do."
That's so true.
Is that right? Am I right, Kelly?
Well, John,
$2 million.
You're probably going to need a couple million.
Yeah.
John, tell us about this beer you made. So Dick Cantwell came to your shop and made a beer with you.
Yeah, he was signing his book, Starting Up Your Own Brewery, which was great. He did it through Union, and
Ben wants to try your homebrew.
I'm going to keep this jug over here.
So he, as part of his signing of the book, he made this beer using these experimental hops, and it's a pale ale. It's a bit hoppy. It's a bit aggressive.
That.
I think it came out really nice, and he's a great guy. Have you met him? You must have met him.
Yeah, we had him on the show right before, at the end of the year. Right, the last show was Dick Cantwell, and we had Jamie and Irene from Full Sail Brewing, too. So yeah. That was pretty cool.
Okay, yeah.
Well,
so
he came over to an event I was doing after your event. He came over to an event. I was standing in the gate in Brooklyn talking to Bobby, and Dick Cantwell walked in. And said, "Oh, it's just this Bitter and Esther is doing this thing."
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We learned a lot, and he talked about squeegeeing a lot. Make sure you squeegee less.
I think that's kind of a maxim for life, really.
Squeegee less.
Squeegee less. Yeah.
Unless it's your job.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, the truth is, that's actually how Giuliani cleaned up the city, right?
With squeegees, yeah.
Squeegeed
or
for
less? Less squeegees.
No, less squeegees.
Less squeegees.
That's right.
The truth of it, though, is, and Bob, you touched on this a minute ago. You said it's about passion, and that's something we see with our show and with this show over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. The truth is, if you do what you love, you'll never work another day in your life, no matter how hard you quote-unquote work. And I've never
have to work another day in my life.
Absolutely. Think about it. I've never seen people work as hard as brewers. I mean, up before dawn, several days a week, depending on how many days they brew, and doing this thing day in, day out, making great beer, and sanitation, you know what I mean? The things you have to do to make amazing beer. A lot of people don't talk about that. They just look at what's in the glass, but look at the process. These guys work their butts off.
It's all about love.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
But if
you go to Bitter Nesters in Brooklyn, guaranteed John LaPaula will talk to you about sanitation. And you have, tell us the different types of
sanitation.
No, John, this is good. When you're cleaning your beer set, what are the two different types of sanitary cleaners that you can use?
Well, in home brewing and in brewing, cleanliness is the first thing before sanitation. We use something called Star San, which is just an acid that helps to sanitize. But you have to be very clean. And so when I teach the beginning classes, it's kind of like, you must be clean. They're like, have you seen my apartment? What are you
That's
kidding
all he
me?
Talks about.
Yeah, I talk about hops a little bit and malt. But yeah, I mean, it is an important thing because we are making this liquid petri dish. No matter whether you're a home brewer or a craft brewer, you have this thing that needs to be kept with one organism. That's your yeast. Yep. And it's something you have to keep an eye out for. So, yeah.
Kelly,
is important.
Kelly, tell us a little bit about the bone-crushing work of being a brewer.
Well, it's actually quite a delightful job, and most people should try to do it.
Yeah.
That's why I don't brew.
Which is the opposite of what I usually tell people. I usually tell people it's the most unforgiving job in the world. You know, I mean, basically, you're picking up bags of grain that are 55 pounds, and one batch for us is about 40 bags.
Oh, okay.
So you're picking those up, cutting them, throwing them into the thing, and we do have a nice mill that mills it up for us, and a grain conveyor and auger. But a lot of times, people are carrying this mash around, and you gotta hoe this stuff out with a big paddle and get it into big tubs. And I think you guys did that when you came by the brewery. You pulled the grains out.
Yes, we did.
You're talking about 2,000 pounds of grain.
Yes, we've definitely we're hose. We've hoed a lot.
You have experience with the grain hose of the breweries.
There's some definite hoeing. Yeah. So I need to stop now.
Yeah.
It keeps you young.
Yeah. And then, obviously we have a very rigorous chemical training program, or what I would call very rigorous. Some people might call sufficient. But, anytime you're dealing with basic chemicals, sodium hydroxide and acids and things that can make you blind if you get it in your eyes, it can permanently burn your skin. So these things are important for cleaning industrial tanks, because you're not just kind of cleaning out buckets and stuff like
it's
that.
It's not a toothbrush.
You're cleaning, 2,000, 3,000, for us, and it's fairly small, all said and done, we're cleaning 2,000 or 3,000 gallon tanks with, tens of feet of brewer sludge, trube and Krausen rings and all kinds of stuff that just doesn't need to be there.
Can you say that again more slowly?
Krausen rings and trube. Don't put it down the drain. It's verboten.
But it's like you cooked all night and you're the pot washer and you still got to scrub the inside of the...
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really big pot.
You really got to scrub it out and get it cleaned up. And that's really the most important thing, because if one little thing goes wrong, 3,000 gallons of beer, toast.
Down so, the drain. And that's for everybody out there in the world. When you are drinking that great craft beer, think also of all the sweat equity that went into making that great pint that's in your hand. And it is.
Give thanks.
Yes, give thanks. Go thank a brewer, man. Thank a brewer.
Thank you, brewers. Thank Kelly, buddy. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio News. All right.
Sun and race.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. So we're here in Roberta's in Brooklyn, and New York City Beer Week is coming up. It's coming up February 21st to March 2nd, and I'm here with Kelly Taylor. He's of Kelso and Heartland Brewing, and also he's the treasurer of the New York City Brewers Guild. Kelly, we've got some special events planned for Beer Week. Let us know what's going on.
Well, we have the opening party on February 21st at Grand Central Terminal, the Grand Central Terminal.
Amazing.
We're doing a 30-brewery, 800-people beer festival in the one of the oldest train stations in the country. So that should be a good opening
That's
party.
Awesome.
Should be awesome.
And then for our New York City Brewers Choice, which is the fourth year, we're doing working with Grow NYC Green Markets and Valley Malt. We're having some brewers make batches of beer with
Right, and that was part of a discussion that you and I had had later last year was we should do a beer event and bring in breweries that are using local grains and Hudson Valley and Massachusetts and upstate New York, but using grains that are grown in the region. And so Brewer's Choice kind of evolved into that this year. So people are being invited to bring beers that they've made with grains that Andrea and her husband have malted at Valley Malt. So that's really exciting.
How's that
project.
Process going for you? I mean, what beer or beers are you going to make?
I made a beer that I pretty much bought everything that Andrea had. I said, what do you have? And she gave me a list. I said, okay, send me those, you know, in the current time. And she's not only malting, but she's growing triticale, which is a rye-wheat hybrid old world grain. It's kind of an interesting rye-wheat grain. And so she sent me a bunch of this triticale that I've used in smoked beers in the past where she smoked it with cherry wood from her farm, but she didn't do that this year. Anyway, so she sent me a bunch of the triticale, and then I got a bunch of pale ale and some other stuff. So we did a red rye or red triticale IPA, and I got I got hops from Peterson Farms in upstate New York. So it's going to be – it's 75% all New York State ingredients. And the only reason it's not 100% is because I couldn't get the extra.
So it seems that growing local grain is a new thing. And having a local maltster is a new thing. We know that the original Sam Adams was
a maltster. It's
actually
a resurgence is what it is. It's not really a new thing, but it's a concerted effort between Grow NYC to get more farmland being used for more craft stuff because the farmers can grow things that are used in craft markets, craft breads and craft beers and craft distilling. They can grow it at a higher profit margin than just for feed or for commodity. So this is one way to create more business in agriculture in the region, which, of course, drives the local economies on levels that are documented but really hard to explain because it's when you got farmers growing grains and farmers are profitable, local farmers, not giant agri-farms, then the economy blossoms. Mm-hmm. And it's a really complicated economic thing, but we're just trying to push that along with beer. Brewer's Choice. What's the date on that? It's 26th?
February 26th.
February
26th. At the White Hotel.
That's going to be featuring
in
that.
Brooklyn.
That's very exciting.
Aren't they making it easier for local breweries to get licensing if they use local ingredients now in New York State?
Yeah. Well, there's the new New York State Farm Bill, not Farm Brewery Bill. So brewers can apply as right now it's using pledging to use 20% of all your grain and all your hops are going to be from New York State. And there's a sliding scale, and eventually it'll be 90% 10 years from now, I think it is. So, but by doing that, it's easier to apply, and it's easier to you get tax benefits and all kinds of good stuff.
So realistically now, like as a brewer in Brooklyn, you know, what percentage of the beer you make could you actually make with New York State malt?
Of all the grain that I'm using, I could probably do maybe 2-5% of my beers could be made entirely with New York State grains. It just disappears so quickly. Mm. It's just almost impossible for me to at this point. But the good thing is if I keep doing it and I keep trying to buy as much as I can, and it really makes a different beer. And you talk about terroir and wines all the time, but when you're using grains grown in the local region and you're using it and it's malted, because this is where breweries get it's a little different than winemaking in the sense that you got a grain, which is a agricultural product, which has got terroir to it in and of itself, and then you have a malt house, and malt houses next door to each other can have completely different product coming out from the same input. So you got the artistry of the maltster, you've got the terroir of the grain, then the brewer gets to pick and choose and blend all these different things. So you get this dizzying array of possibilities that can come out in the final glass. And we were talking about how hard it is to brew beer physically, just mentally trying to prepare these ingredients.
I think that's why I like craft beer so much.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think this craft beer is actually getting to me. This is strong stuff.
Are you drinking the tiny? That's just a baby beer.
Yeah, it's a baby beer. Was it 9% or
no? This is only 11.8.
Oh, it's 11.8.
Only 11.8.
Yeah. Is that Canadian numbers? Is that Canadian percent?
It's actually dummied down a little bit. This was based on our 13th anniversary beer, which was 13.8%.
No wonder you use the word dizzying, because I'm getting a little of that over here right now. Yeah. Spinning around.
It's got great taste.
No wonder an American session beer is 5% alcohol. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, it's a session. It's only 6%.
I think 5% to 6% are really craft session beers.
It's hilarious.
Anymore. It is.
Ben, when you were traveling to write your book, the
Great Northeast Brewery Tour.
There you go. Yay.
He's good. That's all you have to do is say the name of your book.
Is that .com or .org?
Did you encounter any breweries working with local grains or making local beers, local hop beers, things like
that? Yeah, absolutely. Two things. One, I think that a lot of the craft breweries around the country now are really plugged into the local food movement in general, and that beers that are being made with local ingredients, whether or not it's malt or hop or something else, I think that people are dining out with that in mind. And if they go to a restaurant that also has beers from New York or Maine or Maryland that is also responding to that demand, I think, like Kelly said, the more that happens, the more it's going to grow over time.
I can give you an example to that, actually. Yeah. And with our show last year, we spent some time over the summer in Michigan and Indiana, and we stopped off at New Holland Brewing in Michigan, and Michigan is doing of the same thing that New York State is doing in terms of local and using local ingredients and beers. And they have one of their big sellers, one of their flagships, is Mad Hatter. It's an IPA. So this year, for the first time, they did Michigan Hatter, which is all Michigan ingredients, and they can't brew it fast enough. I mean, for one, because there's just not enough ingredients to support the demand, but people want to drink. They're like, I want to drink that because it came from around here. You know, it really piques people's interest, and I think that's part of the movement now.
Local's great, and that's why we're doing New York City's Brewer's Choice this year. But also today we had a great conversation. There's a gentleman named Simo. He's from Finland, and his passion was to make Finnish rye bread. And over the years, he's been able to do that in New York City, and there's farmers upstate growing the rye. And today we had a great email back and forth. He said, I want a local brewer to give me mash because I want to make a batch of beer with mash. And then Kelly said he would, but how does this work, you know?
What was that?
That was the local grain mash song.
Oh, it's very exciting. Yeah. So basically how it works is you just take used grain and use it in about a 25% ratio, typically, and mix it in with your bread. So when I told you we had a ton of grain left, you thought that was a hysterical inside brewer's joke. But we've got all kinds of grain coming out of there, and you want to use a grain that's a little bit darker, a little bit roastier, maybe from a stout or something that's delicious like our sessionable nut brown lager that I brought down here.
Love that beer.
Okay. Whew, segue got that in there. So we're gonna be featuring that bread at the Brewer's Choice event, which ought to be pretty entertaining.
Oh yeah, no, it's awesome.
Cool. Yeah. We tell people to make dog biscuits with the spent grain. Yeah, not bread, just because.
Well, there's actually somebody that's making granola in Brooklyn, and I don't remember the exact name of it, but she's using some of our spent grain as kind of a filler in the granola.
Yeah,
and making granola.
Jimmy Carboni and I were out at Six Point brewing some beer, and a baker came in to try out some of the grains in some cookies. So it's kind of
going on. And pizza dough.
Pizza dough.
Well,
yeah.
I'm doing it for Beer Week. I'm doing a second year dinner at Applewood in Park Slope. And last year, one of the main dishes they did was East Coast snapper rolled in spent grain. And
that's
roasted.
A great idea.
And it was really, it was crusted and roasted. Oh, yeah. It was quite delicious. So we served it with a nut brown.
Did you know, Jimmy, that rolled in spent grain is actually my drag name?
Mine is Valencia Orange.
Ooh.
Valencia Grove. Wow. I'm sorry, Valencia Grove.
Valencia Grove. I like that.
Yeah, Bob, do you have a drag
Google
name?
It.
No.
It's Bob Photo. That's
no,
his
thanks.
Name.
That's his drag name. No okay. Drag here. But I just
oh, come
want
on.
To
this
say
is Brooklyn. It's okay.
Anyway, Ben Keen, we're going to sign off soon. Tell us one last few words about your book. And first of all, who's getting the copy of the book? Is Bob getting it or me?
I mean, who's got more money on him right now?
Wireback.
Hold on, I think I got it.
That's all you. So, hey, New York City Beer Week 2014 is coming up next month, and we have a bunch of upcoming events to share with you. Check it out, NewYorkCityBeerWeek.com. Opening night bash will be Friday, February 21st at Vanderbilt Hall at Grand Central Terminal, which is pretty cool, man.
It's pretty cool, one
of the most impressive spaces in New York City.
It's a beautiful, beautiful
Wednesday,
space.
Wednesday, February 26th, New York City Brewer's Choice with the regional grain projects, local bakers, and all you can eat, drink, and food
at the Wythe Hotel,
yeah, definitely,
which is an awesome.
Very
so
we've
cool.
Got Keegan yeah, very Ales. Cool. You know, Tommy Keegan. I'm going to shut up. There's so many great brewers in New York State, and this is for a whole other show. But Tommy Keegan upstate in Kingston. You know, we had him on the show, and I was like, the guy's like the quietly, you know, successful brewers. Like he went to UC Davis. You know, there's so many talented. New York State has really come of age.
He's
and give a high five to everybody.
Yeah, man.
And New York City, too. So, hey,
yeah.
New York City Beer Week's coming up, and we're really looking forward to that. In closing, guys, thanks for coming on.
Come see us.
Thank you, Jamie.
TheHappyHourGuys.com. Come check us out. We got great stuff there. Lots of
Kelso,
episodes.
Kelso, Bitter and Esther's, Wild
Barker.
BitterandEsters.com. And Ben Keynes, what's your book, Ben?
It's called The Great Northeast Brewery Tour. Come have dinner with me and Jimmy on Monday, January 27th.
All right. I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight now for 4 years. So thank you so much. You can find Beer Sessions Radio on our Facebook page, Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network, and of course, follow us at beer_sessions. If you like this podcast, also check us out on iTunes. Heritage Radio Network is behind all this, and you should check it out and become a member. Go to heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks to Jimmy, Kelly, Ben, Justin, EXE, everybody who's in the room. I can't remember it. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Maggie Seiden, Justin Kennedy, and engineer tonight, Evan. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Assassins Radio. All right.
Thanks,
oh, yeah.
All
right.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.